Hey, Augie.
Good morning, Nia. How are you?
I'm good. We're back again for another in the newsy-ish, but maybe a little bit longer-ish than in the newsy-ish episode
Yeah, I'm
because
feeling
Donald
kind of
Trump can't keep himself out of the news.
feeling sort of in between. I mean, it's in between a short in the news episode versus one of our standard, longer 1 hour long takes.
Before we
Yes.
get to that, how are you?
Oh, I'm lovely. Thank you. Yes.
Yay.
Yes. Yeah.
Yay. I
Okay.
know that today you have it is we're recording this on Super Tuesday,
Oh, yes.
and you have not only Super Tuesday results to deal with because you're a poly person and that's what y'all live for, but
Yeah.
you also have a visitor staying at your house all day today who normally goes to school.
Yeah,
But
my tour.
because the schools are being used for voting places,
Yes.
because we haven't figured that out in this country, we send all our children home so that
Yes.
strangers can come into their schools and vote.
Yeah. Listeners, my 12-year-old gets a day off, and she slept in, and she's wildly entertained by the fact that I'm working and she doesn't have to.
I would be entertained by that at 12, too, I have to admit. But so we're back because Donald Trump and the SCOTUS are doing some interesting dance routines these days.
Oh my goodness, are they ever?
Like
Yes.
he's tangoing with them left and right.
As a person who doesn't like lawyers, and Trump has said this even before he became a politician. For somebody who doesn't like lawyers,
He spends a lot of
he has to
time.
spend a lot of time every day with
Well,
lawyers.
and what's interesting, and I would like to comment on this before you get into the meat of this episode,
Okay.
is Donald Trump has, as when he was president, was kind of disparaging of a lot of the institutions of government,
Yes.
right? Wasn't a huge fan of the Congress, wasn't a huge fan of the agencies, right? Lots
Wasn't
of lots of
a fan of the courts. I mean, because if a federal court ruled against him, he would go ahead and say, "Okay, Obama judges, right?"
Right. They cheated
Which
me out of whatever, fill in the blank.
led Chief Justice John Roberts to do the unusual, where he actually commented, "There aren't Obama judges. There aren't Republican judges. Okay, we're
There are
just
just judges.
judges,
Right.
right? Okay.
That I love J Rob.
Yes.
Not even secretly, like I'm just openly, I love J Rob. But I do think it's interesting that he abides by the Supreme Court decisions.
Yes.
He
Yeah.
respects the court enough. He respects the institution enough.
Yeah, it's like one of the few government institutions that he will actually comply with. Yes.
Yeah, and that he, generally speaking, doesn't hugely complain. He complains about everything. I mean, I'm sure he complains that air is should be easier to breathe, right? Because
Yes.
he's that kind of person.
Yes.
But he doesn't seem to he doesn't seem to take up with them in some way. Like he hasn't given them all nasty nicknames. He hasn't, you know what I mean? He
No.
has a respect for them that I think would be interesting for his for people who really like him and who follow his politics to think about that
Yes.
he does respect some of the institutions, and one of the institutions, generally speaking, is the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if
And
he's going to respect him after this, but
yeah. So what Nia is talking about, listeners, is that the Supreme Court on Wednesday, February 28th, agreed to address a question that former President Donald Trump has posed in federal court. And what we're talking about here is Trump has claimed that he is immune from prosecution for any activities he performed while he was president.
because if the president does it, it's not illegal.
That's correct. Now, this is a claim.
Didn't work out for Richard Nixon
No,
all that well, so I'm
yeah.
not sure that I would. Well,
Yes.
anyway.
So this motion that the Trump attorneys have made arose in the case where Trump was indicted by special counsel Jack Smith in August of last year for Trump's role in the January 6, 2021 attack, riot, some would say insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. All right.
But this is not a question of whether Donald Trump is an insurrectionist or not.
No, no, because
that's a separate issue. This is a question of whether he attempted to overturn the results of the election.
Okay.
Right.
To date, Donald Trump has not been charged with committing an insurrection.
Okay.
None of the federal or state cases against him have made that claim. The four charges
in 91 charges that he'd be in there somewhere, but
well, in this particular case, there were four charges in the indictment, and all of them were related to obstruction. He tried to obstruct an official proceeding. He tried to obstruct an official document. He conspired to commit obstruction, but he's never been charged as an insurrectionist per federal law.
Okay.
But that's taking us away from what the Supreme Court agreed to address. All right. So the district court judge in this case, Tanya Chutkan, set a trial date for March 24th. But in early February, she threw that date out and indicated she would hold off on having the trial until this question of Trump's immunity from prosecution was settled. All right. Now, on February 6th, the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, in a unanimous three-judge opinion, ruled against Trump. All right. They went ahead and said that he could be prosecuted, but they stayed the case, the trial, so that Trump could decide whether or not to appeal to the Supreme Court. Trump did, and the Supreme Court took a couple weeks, but the Supreme Court eventually decided to take the case. The question, and I think I put it in my notes. You recall where I put it in my notes? Oh, yeah, here we go. The justices agreed to decide whether and to what extent a former president is immune for prosecution for conduct that allegedly involves his official acts during his time in office. Because Trump's claim is, when I went ahead and gave my speech on January 6, 2021, I was encouraging the American public challenge and be skeptical of the election results. And as president, I'm supposed to make sure that there was a free and fair election. So that's part of his claim, right? And he said, so how's that unrelated to my office as president? Should I not be concerned as president that we have free and fair elections in the United States? I'm sorry. I tried to get through that without laughing, but I failed. And I apologize, listeners, because I try to go ahead and be, shall we say, honest in my description of what is claimed, you know, by people or what's claimed in documents, etc. All right. So the court has scheduled oral arguments on April 22nd. Now, Nia, this is a very compressed time frame for the Supreme Court to hear a case.
Well, yeah, because the lawyers have to prep it in under a month. And by the lawyers, I mean the Supreme Court bar lawyers.
Okay, so
that would be the people who would be
Trump's lawyers get 3 weeks. So they got 3 weeks from February 28th. Then Jack Smith, okay, who is the respondent, gets 3 weeks to submit his written brief. And then that basically gives the justices 2 weeks, or about a week and a half, to read through all the written briefs and be prepared for the oral arguments on April 22nd. Okay? That's a very compressed time frame.
Right. They're going to be dropping everything else they've been working on.
Well, I mean, and let's face
it. To deal with this.
As longtime listeners to this podcast knows, when we get further into the spring of any Supreme Court term, all right,
they get senior fever. They get senioritis.
And the tough cases are still being written.
Right. Okay. Which is, they should do those up front, but they want to get done and they have the hardest part to do.
So this, so this is a difficult issue. I mean, there's no getting around it. Okay. There's nothing in the U.S. Constitution that would support Trump's claim. Then again, there's nothing in the U.S. Constitution that's against Trump's claim. I mean, we take it as an article of faith in the United States that no person, not even the president, is above the law.
Right.
And what we usually point to is the fact that the president can be impeached, okay, found guilty and removed from office.
Right.
Which Trump has said, well, they tried to impeach me twice, once specifically because of my involvement in the January 6, 2021 Capitol events, and they never found me guilty. So how can they prosecute me? Right?
Right, but that's a, but what someone should explain to Donald Trump, if that is his question, is that the Congress is separate from the special investigator, which is doing a separate investigation. And he just proved his point by saying, I was subjected to impeachment, therefore I was subjected to a legal proceeding, therefore I am not above the law.
Well, what
you cannot have that both ways, except,
Neil, what you're pointing to is separation of powers. Impeachment is a legislative act or process. The charges against Trump brought by special counsel Smith is a judicial, if you will, act or function.
Right, because Jack Smith works for the Department of Justice, doesn't he?
Yeah, but the case is where? In the judicial branch.
Right.
So this is separation of powers 101, right?
Right.
Impeachment is a function that a power or authority belongs to the legislative branch, right?
Right. Nobody else can impeach Donald Trump. Only the House and the Senate can impeach Donald Trump.
So
anybody else can just sue him, which is different.
And when the executive branch enforces a law, okay, that's Article 2. That's the executive branch. But a federal court can go ahead and dismiss charges, agree to take them, and have a trial. That's completely judicial, right? Yeah. So where this gets weird, okay, so beyond...
Oh, yeah, because it's not weird already.
Already, yeah, okay. So beyond the constitutional, and by the way, listeners, I mean, we could have an entire separate issue about presidential immunity, right? I mean, though, interestingly enough, most constitutional law scholars, even those in general who, you know, support the office of president, no matter who occupies it, will go ahead and say that no president has complete immunity, right?
Right. The president is not an authoritarian dictator. Whatever phrase, whatever word Dr. Saladino would use to refer to this person, he is not that. He is the president of the United States, and there are still standards to be held to.
So even though in the early 80s, in the Nixon versus Fitzgerald case, the Supreme Court suggested that certain executive branch positions are policy discretionary positions and therefore receive, if you will, heightened immunity. Even that court ruling never said the president has full immunity. So what the court, I think, in taking this case is going to try to explore is to provide some guidance to the lower courts as to the extent presidents do have immunity, right?
Because they have some level of immunity, they just don't have complete immunity.
Because the D.C. Circuit ruling, Nia, and listeners, basically suggested that presidents have no immunity. Well, if that's the case, what president in their right, first of all, what person would ever run for the office of president?
Exactly. And then, exactly.
And then second, what president in their right mind would do anything risk-taking, okay, in the office, because they could potentially be sued even after they've been president?
Let's assume for just a brief moment that under your presidency, under the presidency of John Augenbaugh, you use a drone to eliminate someone.
Yes.
If you don't have immunity for that, their family could then sue you for murder.
Or can
potentially a court court somewhere could indict you for murder.
Yeah, you're talking about the Justice Department of a future president bringing charges against you. Okay. Where would this end?
Right.
Okay.
Right. I'm with you that, or, and I'm with the court, if that's the way they go, that there has to be some level of immunity as president, that the basic doing of the office protects you in some way. By the same token, if you are president of the United States and you are a pedophile,
yeah,
that is not part of the presidency, and
yes,
you should not be immune from prosecution, right? You have committed heinous acts against children. You need to be punished for that, right? That'll be an interesting talk about tough. How do you think it's going to go?
Well, what I'm going to focus on next, Nia, is the fact that once the court said it was going to take the case, almost immediately the court got lambasted by liberals, okay, for contributing to Trump's effort to delay this trial until after the election in November. Okay. So I'm going to lay out a couple scenarios. Okay. So the court hears oral arguments the third week of April. The earliest we would probably see a decision from the Supreme Court, and I'm saying if they worked overtime on this and there was, you know, pretty much collective agreement, it's going to take them easily 3 to 4 weeks, May at the earliest. But the more than likely what's going to happen is the court won't rule until June, okay, or late June, early July, because, Nia, as you pointed out a few moments ago, the justices don't like to be working once the calendar turns to July. They get really, really antsy.
They get stir crazy. Washington, D.C. stir crazy. They want out of that place for a little while.
So if the court rules against Trump and denies his immunity claim, the trial won't take place until August or September, because the trial court judge has to give both parties time to prepare for the trial, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, remember, she had set a trial date for March and then suspended that just to go ahead and focus on Trump's claim that he's immune.
So right, because if the court finds him immune, her case is moot, right?
Smith's case is moot. There's no trial, right?
It's all done. You go home.
And that's what the lawyers have been focusing on. They have not been focusing on the actual trial. They've been focusing on this particular motion, right? So
they want to write the most persuasive thing in the world that they can to the Supreme Court to get the Supreme Court to say he's immune, move on.
So in this scenario, you're talking about a trial that would start in late August, early September. That's just a couple months before the election. And this trial isn't going to be...
I was going to say, you know what that is? That's the busy season for politicians.
Yes. And this trial isn't going to be a short one, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about potentially, 25 to 30 different witnesses, right?
And the high likelihood that Donald Trump will want to be in the courtroom every day.
Day. That's right.
Because this is, I mean, there's some real big questions to be answered here in this court case.
So realistically, Trump could argue scenario two, that after the Supreme Court decides in late June, early July, that there are good reasons to postpone the trial until after the election, because you can't ask a major party's nominee for president to suspend their election activities so they can actually help with their defense in a criminal case. Because if he's found guilty, potentially, okay, he could spend multiple years in jail.
He won't, but he could.
He could, right?
Right.
So the liberals are like, the Supreme Court taking this case, okay, is contributing to Trump's effort to get this trial delayed. Because if the trial is delayed until after the election, if Trump wins the election, Trump could go ahead and order his Justice Department to dismiss the charges. Voila.
Case done,
right?
That's not a dictatorship.
Okay. On the other hand, okay, I would remind listeners, okay, that historically, okay, when trials are scheduled, is supposed to be for, okay, the defense, or when they're scheduled, is supposed to allow the defense adequate time to prepare. Now, mind you, okay, the activities in question occurred on January 6, 2021. Trump was not indicted until the fall of 2023. Okay. Who's been pushing for this trial to occur quickly? Jack Smith, right? Smith wanted to skip the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals and go directly to the U.S. Supreme Court on the immunity charge because he said time was of the essence. Now, the Supreme Court rejected that and told him he had to go through the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, which meant there was a month lost right there. Right. The other thing to take into consideration, listeners, and I'm not coming down on either side on this. I just want to throw this out. Per Justice Department rules. All right. The Justice Department should not bring a case which might affect an election. That's Justice Department rules. Okay. So basically what Smith is doing here. Okay. And he's been really cagey. He's never come out and said this, Nia, okay, in open court or in any of the written briefs. All right. Smith can't say why he wants to rush this case. I mean, he just can't say it because if he says it, then he will quite clearly be violating Justice Department rules in regards to the timing of bringing a prosecution against a potential candidate. All right. And these are longstanding Justice Department rules. They've been in existence for decades, right? You know, the Justice Department doesn't do politics. Well, you can't say you're not doing politics when you want to go ahead and speed up the process because you want it to occur before an election. Okay.
Okay.
Yes. All right. I'm really torn on this. The other thing is the court expedited the matter. I mean, let's face it. You and I have talked about the Supreme Court's processes. The Supreme Court never does things quickly. They are, in effect, potentially taking and deciding this case in 3 to 4 months.
which for them is a land speed record.
I mean, I have, to my recollection, okay, the only two times, the only three times the Supreme Court has acted more quickly was Bush versus Gore, the 2000 presidential election. And the main reason why they did things so quickly is that there's a federal law that says the submission of electoral college votes from each state has to occur in early December. So if they didn't decide, okay, potentially they would be allowing the state of Florida to break federal law. Okay, that's one. The other one was Nixon versus the United States in regards to the Watergate tapes case. Okay. But there, Nixon had never been indicted. All right. Nixon
had never. Yeah, there was the threat, but
he'd been indicted, right? So theoretically, okay, what's so different about this case is Trump's already been indicted. At that point, historically in the criminal justice system, okay, the timing of hearings, okay, is to be for the benefit of whom?
The defense.
The defense, right?
And why do we do it that way? Because theoretically, the defense has less material, less staff, less everything than the government has.
Yes.
And so the benefit goes to the defense, even though in this particular instance, the defendant is a wealthy individual who could hire a battery of lawyers. Well, I don't know if he could at this point, because there are other issues.
His finances have taken
his finances have taken a bit of a hit lately. But theoretically, the state will always have more power and more resources than the individual. And so those rights accrue to the individual in an attempt to equalize that power relationship. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Yep. So that's part of, I don't know. I have all kinds of feelings about this, Augie. I don't know what to do with all of my feelings. I mean, there's part of me that's like, no, this question has to be answered before any other question can be answered. Because if the president, and I don't mean President Trump, former President Trump, I mean any president, if any president is immune from prosecution for anything, then that is not an office that we should be having anyone in. We should just have a vacancy in the presidency if you can do whatever you want to do and not be held accountable to the law. I have always believed that that phrase, what no man is above the law, right? That laws don't matter if there are people who can't be held accountable to them. You might as well not have laws. But then there's another part of me that's like, as much as I am not a huge fan of the former president, he deserves a fair trial. He deserves a fair hearing, because everybody deserves that. If we don't give it to him because we don't like him, or we don't like what he says publicly or whatever, then that's crap. That system is crap. And we don't believe it. What we need, I mean, he has to be treated like every other defendant, and he has to be given all of the opportunities to defend himself fairly and justly, and he has to be assumed innocent until proven guilty. It's up to the state to prove that.
Yeah, and what you just said there at the end is what, you know, I tend to emphasize with my students. You know, guys, the 4th, 5th, 6th, and 8th amendments are designed, okay, to make it difficult for the state to get a conviction, right?
Right.
Due process of law means, okay, the defendant is guaranteed a process. And we don't go, you know,
likable and unlikable defendants.
That's right. Okay.
Harvey Weinstein deserved to have, I'm not equating Donald Trump and Harvey Weinstein, because they are not
in the same category
of humans, but
just pick your most despicable criminal defendant, okay?
Right, that person still deserves
the same due process as your most sympathetic criminal defendant, right?
Yeah, because if we do it based on criminals' likableness, Right. That's an awfully dangerous game to play. You know, this idea of, well, but that person's so nice. Yeah, no.
Yes. And nobody
knew Jeffrey Dahmer was eating people in his apartment because he seemed like a nice guy. Right. Yeah. Like that.
Yeah, he was a quiet, nice guy. That's what his neighbors said.
Right.
Okay. Until
they were like, what's that smell?
Oh, yes.
So,
yes. Okay. Yeah. So, you know, and I'm divided here. I mean, because, you know, like you, Nia, this idea of full presidential immunity strikes me as undemocratic.
Yeah,
right?
That's crap.
Okay. It runs counter to checks and balances. On the other hand, okay, the court's going to have to take some time on this because that's a complicated issue, right? How do you parse the nuance so that going forward, we just don't have the opposition party, okay, turning around in criminal charges against former presidents because
right.
they don't like their policies.
Right.
Okay.
Or their personality.
Yes.
Or somebody got peeved at a dinner party one night. Like, you don't want any of that to be.
I mean, there's already enough hyper-partisanship and partisan retribution. I mean, Nia, you know this because you've heard me talk about this at length. Okay. You know, in the current milieu, if you will, the current context and environment of American politics, the political parties seem to be having, you know, playing a game of, oh, I can top this, right?
Right.
Or I can top that.
Yeah,
right?
Somebody hold my beer.
Okay. I mean, after a while, we need to have clear rules to where the parties basically understand, okay, this is the line.
Right.
And
even if
we want to cross it, we can't, right? But that's going to require the justices asking some really probing questions at oral arguments and actually debating amongst one another. I mean, there are some of the justices right now who are very pro executive branch authority. There are others who should be very pro defendant, where they bend over backwards based on their experience and their previous rulings to go ahead and give the benefit of the doubt to a defendant. Well, in this case, the defendant is the former president that you may not have liked all that much.
Right. But you may find, I think that there will be some strange bedfellows in the concurrences and dissents.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Of whatever they decide. I think we'll be like, wait, why are those two people voting together? And the reason will be exactly that
yes.
one of them is coming at it from presidents to have enormous immunity, and the other is coming at it from defendants have enormous rights, and they will end up on the same side for whatever reason.
But that's going to take time. Because they flesh
right.
this
they
stuff
have to work
out.
That out, right?
Yeah, they flesh this out in their opinions.
Well,
right?
And they can't, not to put any pressure on you, J. Rob, but you can't screw this one up.
No,
this isn't going to get a take back. If you guys find that the president is immune, democracy's over. But like we don't like there. I mean, we really do have a larger problem at that point.
Yeah.
Because then we would be depending on Congress to make laws to limit the president, which they will not do. And there will be all kinds of issues. By the same token, if you treat the president as a regular person, then you paralyze the office.
Yes.
That person can't do certain things because they will be fearful, like you said before, fearful of lawsuit, fearful of prosecution later, not even prosecution at the moment, but prosecution 10 years down the road. Who would run for office at that point? Like that,
yeah.
That's bonkers.
But that's bonkers. And you know, are we going to go ahead and make changes to the criminal justice process and system simply because the defendant is the former president?
Right.
I mean, lawyers for those accused of crime make all kinds of arguments because they want to get evidence thrown out. They want to get testimony, you know, thrown out. They want to go ahead and, you know, have the charges dropped completely, right? If we're going to go ahead and say that, okay, all of those rules, which are designed to protect criminal defendants apply, except for when you are the former president. I'm sorry. Okay. That's not due process, right?
Right.
Okay. Again, these are complex matters, right?
Yeah.
And let's face it, no matter how the Supreme Court rules, okay, partisans on both sides are going to be upset, right? Partisans are going to be upset. So the Supreme Court's going to legitimacy and reputation is going to take another hit. And if it's going to take a hit, then if I'm one of the nine justices, I want to make sure that we go ahead and fully debate all of these issues.
Yeah, I want to make it worth it. I want to make what we write worth the hit we're going to take from both sides.
Yes.
Because there are going to be crabby people on both sides who will find complaint with whatever they find. But I also want to urge listeners who may be rooting for this particular president to not have immunity because you don't like this president, that your guy will eventually be president. Maybe not this election, maybe not the next election, but eventually whoever it is that you like will become president. And when they are president, they will be held to this same standard. So this standard needs to be written as neutrally and as carefully as possible. We want the justices to take their sweet time and get it right, because it's going to be all the presidents going forward will be held to this, whatever the standard is. And we don't want them to do it in any way politically so that it hurts one party and not the other, because eventually that will come around to bite you in the butt. The other thing, Augie, that I would like to note for the record is, as I was reading you through your notes and as I've been listening to you talk, there's a thing that we're missing here.
What's that?
We need an ethics committee or an ethics board, the way this, you know, the legislature has that for themselves. You can be turned in as a senator or as a house, a congressperson, you can be turned into the ethics committee in your respective house, and they investigate you. We need an ethics board for the executive, because the way that's working out right now is we're using the Supreme Court as the ethics board. And I'm not sure that's a good idea, considering that the Supreme Court only about 10 minutes ago came up with their own ethics rules.
Well, I mean, technically you could go ahead and say
rules, their own ethics statement.
Well, technically you could go ahead and say the purpose of impeachment was to go ahead and make sure that members of the executive branch and the judicial branch were acting ethically. But the impeachment process has become such a joke, okay, that you can't even say that anymore.
Well, and that's another branch. See, I think there needs to be an investigative branch within.
Okay, but I'm going to play devil's advocate.
Of course, you are.
The Ethics Committee for the United States Congress has been widely and historically criticized for taking it easy on the members.
Right. Oh, so you think that would happen in the executive?
Oh my God.
If they had an ethic. Okay. So you'd put a point to set somebody who really liked you would never find you ethically wanting.
Or let's say the ethics board was comprised of former members of the executive branch. Okay.
Then it would become partisan, and then it would become,
they start projecting down the road and they're like, well, if we say that the current president has violated this ethical norm,
then when I want to do it, I'm gonna be held to that same standard. Okay. There's no way out of this.
Well, we could flesh this out in another podcast episode, but okay. But it gets complicated.
It's sticky, right? It's very sticky. And what's fascinating to me is that the Supremes felt compelled to take it.
They felt compelled
to answer this question. Like,
there was not even a dissenting vote to take this case.
Oh, really? All nine decided they would do it.
Well, nobody wrote a dissenting opinion saying the court should not take this case.
And nobody has recused themselves or anything like that. Like, I don't want to be involved in this craziness.
Yeah, they haven't even found a made up reason to go ahead and recuse themselves. This is one of those times to where I would be hyper ethical. I would be like, you know, maybe I went ahead and played golf with special counsel Smith, right? Maybe I ran a road because he used to love to run road races. Maybe I ran the same road race. Okay, my ethics can be called into question. I'm out of here, right?
But the other thing is, just as a side note, aside from this question, but isn't this the kind of thing that they live for?
Oh my goodness.
At some level, right? Yes. That sort of, we can make a mark forever. This will be the Roberts Court decision that stands for next 150 years or, you know, whatever about presidential immunity.
Even if they're not concerned about their legacy, which, you know, if you're talking about John Roberts, he, I think most observers would say he is, right? But even if you're not, right? Again, these are some of the brightest minds in the United States. They live for this kind of intellectual challenge. It's why they got into the law, right?
Yeah.
Right? You know, this is a seemingly intractable situation. How can we provide a solution? Right? Okay. I mean, you know, this is the meat of their meal, right?
Right.
Okay, they can't wait to go ahead and pull out the steak knives. Right. Okay. So, I mean, intellectually, okay, I bet some of them are just like, you know, it's really too bad that it's, you know, Trump, or really it's too bad it's special counsel Smith, because this is a really fascinating constitutional issue.
Which it is. I mean, and you'd think that in 250 years, we'd have answered it already.
Yeah, but we haven't. I mean,
so
but
clearly, as a nation, we are maturing enough that we're now starting to say, wait, is everything the president does okay?
Like, well, you also
we're starting to ask questions about, because can you imagine if presidential immunity did not extend to purchasing chunks of land to add it to the United States?
Yeah, when you had no legal authority to do so.
Right. You just buy Louisiana, you just buy Alaska. You just like, you can't do that. Like,
see Thomas Jefferson. Right. Or maybe it was easy to go ahead and say, we don't have to come up with any kinds of laws or ethical rules about immunity when your first president was Washington.
Right.
I mean, come on
and
now.
And who was beloved across the nation.
Yeah, I mean,
well,
even
such as the nation was, but
even members of the opposition political party genuflected.
Like, yeah, I like that guy.
Yeah, they
good.
Yeah, they genuflected and they kissed his ring when he, you know, walked into the room. Come on now, right? But you know, this is where we are, 21st century America. I mean,
we've gotten presidents now that we're like, I'm not kissing that nasty ring. Get away from me.
Well, and think about it. I've joked in a previous podcast episode, and I know you and I have talked about it off recording, but theoretically, we could have yet another presidential candidate run for office, okay, in a jail,
right,
in a prison. I mean, Eugene Debs was the first one, I think, in the 2020 presidential election. You know, he was the Socialist Party, you know, nominee. And he ran for office and he didn't get very many votes, but nevertheless, we had a presidential candidate, okay, in a prison cell, right?
Yeah, wasn't he arrested for sedition or something? It was something
It was sedition, right? Theoretically, we could have that happen again if the Supreme Court acts fast enough, okay, and the trial actually takes place, okay.
And there are some people in this country who would vote for a President Trump in jail over a President Biden not in jail.
Yes. Yep.
So that would be an interesting set of results. Like, what can the president do from jail?
Yeah, there's a really fascinating article.
Or do you get home arrest? Do you get like White House arrest where you have the little thingy on your ankle and you... And you know, those things now, they make a noise when you go outside of the range that you're allowed to go. So the president shows up at Mar-a-Lago and his leg is going, burr, 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 burr.
For listeners who might be interested in exploring those scenarios, political science professor Keith Whittington from Princeton has a recently published article in reason.com where he goes ahead and lays out all the scenarios. And it's fascinating. I mean, some of them are far-fetched, but I mean, if this goes a certain way, we could have a presidential candidate, okay, from a major political party. I mean,
we could have a president from prison, not just a presidential candidate,
and there,
but an actual president from prison.
And listeners, Nia asked,
there's no constitutional prohibition against serving from prison, is there?
No. Nia, you asked me that question last year. I mean, like, out of the blue, you went ahead and asked it. And I was, and you're like, okay, you know, constitutional law scholar, you know, riddle me this. And I'm like, there's no prohibition. There's nothing in the U.S. Constitution that says you can't serve as president from a prison cell. And I know that seems far-fetched, but again, if you're the framers, it's not like you're sitting around and saying, okay, so let's come up with the most bizarre hypothetical we, okay. So anyways, listeners, again, the oral arguments will take place, I believe, the third week of April.
And we will so be back when they put out their...
Yes, their opinions.
Their opinions. And it won't be one when they put out their multiple opinions. It's not surprise me if there are eight of them.
Oh, yeah. I'm easily seeing four or five minimum.
Yeah.
Right?
If they put out a per curiam, I will fall over in a passed out state.
But even with a per curiam, there might be like, you know, four or five concurring opinions.
It's true. You got it right, but here's where we messed up. So
anyways,
I'm looking forward to that, Augie. We'll do that. Hopefully, well, no, we'll have to do that before the break for the summer, because they will do it before the break for the summer.
Yeah, this will be a part of our Supreme Court wrap-up. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, that's what I'm projecting. I would be shocked if they said,
we're going to wait till August.
Oh, I would even, well, that wouldn't shock me as much as if they went ahead and said, you know, the first week of May. by the way, we crossed that off from our to-do list. Here's our opinion. Moving on.
Wow. 2 weeks later. Although they're already researching it.
Oh, yeah.
They're already researching presidential powers and immunity and what all of that means and how, like, they're already doing that even before they get these briefs. They're going to read the briefs. I'm not saying they're not. But they're already doing background research so that they have a breadth of knowledge so that when they get those briefs, they have things to work with. So,
yeah, it would not shock me, Nia, if each of the justices has assigned a clerk to produce
to this question.
Okay, you know, something like an 8 to 10 page research memorandum, right?
Right.
Tell
me everything we know about presidential immunity, or what's been talked about, or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, what federal court cases have said about it, what the White House Legal Counsel's office has said, what the Congressional Research Service has produced on this. Okay. They'll ask for it all.
Can I just say, as we're wrapping up, the person who should stay out of this is Joe Biden.
Yes.
Yeah. Joe Biden should not peep. He should not say a word.
Nope.
When they say, what do you think about the Supreme Court? He could say, wait, there's a Supreme Court? Like, he should just, he should not even acknowledge. He should be like, this has nothing to do with me, and I am not going to comment. He doesn't need to make political hay out of this. He doesn't need to try to get in, you know, try to dig in on this. Don't do any of that before we see what the Supreme say. In part because you don't want to be accused of influencing, but also in part because this is so delicate right now that if you poke any part of it, the whole thing's going to explode. Like, this is just this is a big pack of C4, and he needs to leave it alone.
if he's going to have a senior moment between now and the November election,
about this.
He should go ahead and say, huh? What did you ask? Okay.
Wait, if a
reporter asks a question, he should go ahead and point to his ear. I can't hear you. You know, I'm 80 some years old.
Sorry. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yes.
Yeah. No, because anything that he says will be seen as putting a finger on the scale.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got to stay away from this. All right, Nia. Good chat.
Thanks, Augie. We'll be back with this episode, with this question in a few months.
Yep.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.